Good evening, Cincinnati. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And together,
we're the hierarchy of the talk show heap.
It don't get no better
than the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
We're starting this morning's broadcast off with a big bang.
Boom!
Kapow. We've got a guest right off the bat.
The you may have noticed that the Congress was just voted in as all Republicans, and Newt Gingrich is like their leader or something, and they got a bone to pick with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. Well, Rob, what is it that brings our lovely lilting voices to the ears of the tri-state every week?
WAIF Cincinnati.
And who funds WAIF Cincinnati?
I don't know.
The public funds that the tax people collect and the city council distributes down to us.
Oh, okay. That's a little bit different, though, than the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
But it's still the same concept.
Still the same concept, yes, but a different animal.
What are you trying to say, Rob?
I'm saying yes, but no.
What I'm saying is that what these bozos vote for in Washington is going to have a direct effect on the late-night listening habits of the Queen City.
Possibly. I guess. Well, that brings us to our guest, Wayne Godwin. Mr. Godwin, how are you?
I'm well. How are you doing,
Rob? Hey, pretty good. And you're with Channel 48?
I'm with Channel 48.
And what's that?
Channel 48 is the public television station that's been serving the greater Cincinnati area for 40 years.
What do you do there? You the cameraman? You sweep up?
I'm the president general manager.
Wow.
I have worked camera and done a number of other things there, as do other members of the staff.
Sir, what is your favorite program on the station?
What's my favorite program on the station?
Yeah, you like Barney or Big Bird or Mr. Rogers?
Listen,
or
I'm in favor of every program we have, but I guess if I had to pick a favorite, it would probably be one of the Ken Burns Civil War series programs.
No, that was good.
It was a good series.
What do you think of Dr. Julius Sunder Miller? You know, physics is his business.
Listen, I think he does some wonderful physics, brings it to life.
Is he still alive?
I have no earthly idea. He is on tape. He is on Channel 48.
How old are those tapes?
Those tapes, some of the instructional television tapes are very old. I mean, we've actually made the statement that you can hold them up and see through them.
Some of them go back before World War II.
So how much of the budget for the CPB, Corporation for Public Broadcasting, is actually paid for by the government?
Well, basically, all of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting budget comes from the government, the $285
million. Mm-hmm.
When you localize that to Channel 48, the federal monies that we receive come to about 11% of our budget, about $700,000 a year.
Is that about par for the course?
We are a little on the low side of that because, in fairness, the community's been very good in supporting us. The average station, about 14% to 15% of their budget.
So I guess the stations out in the sticks need more money from Washington.
The smaller stations that don't have as large a population base need more money from the federal government to make sure their existence is continued, which is one of the major concerns that we have in the industry, and that is that if you take away the federal dollars, one of the first things that's going to happen is a number of the stations are simply going to cease to be able to broadcast for lack of funds.
Why couldn't these stations, like Channel 48 and some of the smaller ones and even some of the bigger ones, make up that 11 to 14% with just showing a couple commercials?
Well, the fact of the matter is, first of all, we're prohibited by law from showing a couple of commercials.
Well, I think if they destroyed if they quit funding the CPB, they'd have to change the law.
No, that's very fair. And the word that has been used in Washington a lot has been privatized public broadcasting. And the fact of the matter is, the definitions that we have heard have been rather vague as to what privatized actually means. They tend to range from conversations very recently about a company as large as Bell Atlantic, quote-unquote, taking over the role of CPB and funding public broadcasting, all the way to, well, maybe you could be a little more commercial than you are right now. What we find is that's a pretty slippery slope, that you're either commercial or you're not commercial. And when you are commercial, the fact is the need to sell commercial time tends to change the face of the programs that you offer. And so instead of the Nova series being about serious science, it ends up slipping over into the outer limits. Let's talk about flying saucers this week, and next week we'll talk about the abominable snowman.
So you'd just as soon run the X-Files then?
I'm sorry?
You'd just as soon run the X-Files then?
Well, that would be one of the end results of becoming a commercial television station. We, by the way, don't have any problem at all with commercial stations. We think that they serve a purpose within our broadcast landscape and should be there. We also think that public television stations do as well.
Okay. What do you think about the National Endowment for the Arts? Do you think that serves an important function in American society?
We have seen wonderful programs that have been made possible by the National Endowment for the Arts, programs that I'm sure this community benefits from, and programs that public television has benefited from, yeah.
Well, one of the boneheads in Congress, his name is Tom DeLay. He's a Republican from Texas, and he says he has watched the NEA with disgust. And he also says nothing in the Constitution requires the government to fund obscene art. Now, what do you think about some of these artists who get NEA grants or funds and they'll take a crucifix and put it in a jar of urine or something?
Or
like
more
that.
In your case, was the recent series about the gay life of black guys?
I think that when you get into programming like that, it ends up being a matter of individual taste, and I think that in fairness the congressman may well have a point as far as the federal government not necessarily being in that business. It doesn't necessarily mean though that you defund the entire program. For the same programs that someone could voice a concern about as being controversial programs or unnecessary programs or, as you say, obscene programs, the list is a long and attractive list of programs that are funded that anyone would agree are very worthwhile programs.
Well, now we get into the argument of who's going to decide what is obscene and what is not.
Yeah,
because
that's
dirty to me and Rob may or may not be what's dirty to you or some of your viewers.
That's very possible.
I have a big question for you. This one's been gnawing at me for a while. Public television brings a lot of, like, culture to the masses. A lot of opera, a lot of Shakespearean dramas, that sort of thing.
Monty Python.
And how in the world did that Lawrence Welk get mixed in with that?
Well, we would contend. Let me, if I may, bore you a bit with a story about Lawrence Welk.
I tell you, any story about Lawrence Welk will probably bore everybody.
It probably will. One, two, three, though. Here we go. Basically, I would agree with you, or would have agreed with you some years ago, that my goodness, how in the world can an organization that prides itself on high-quality programming suddenly be in the business of the rebroadcast of the old Lawrence Welk program?
What's next, Hee-Haw?
Well, I don't know. It depends on what society needs. It depends on what's not being furnished within the public spectrum as far as broadcast goes. We did a production of the stars of the Lawrence Welk show about 2 years ago out of our studio.
The Lennon Sisters.
The Lennon Sisters weren't there, but we had Bobby and we had Myron Florin playing the accordion. A wonderful group of people, by the way. And I will tell you, during that production, I became a convert, not so much to the program, but to the reason for the program being there. The program is not available in the market except on public broadcasting. And the people who come to that music, to that program, are people who aren't served otherwise. They fit into, I would think, the same group that may well enjoy your program in that they don't find this type of broadcasting other places. So I think there is a target audience that they're served by the Lawrence Welk program, as strange as that may be. It may not be commercially viable as it once was, or even commercially viable, but it doesn't mean that there's not a need for it, not a desire for it in the community. And again, it's public television serving a niche that's not served in the commercial medium.
A lot of people in Congress are worried that the public television stations aren't getting enough money from the toys that are sold from Big Bird and Barney, and these toys that sell billions of dollars worth of merchandise.
Yeah.
And not enough of that is getting back to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Are you getting any money from the sale of Big Bird toys and Barney toys?
Oh, yeah. There is certainly money. First of all, I would caution against the term billions in the plural. The numbers that have been bantered about, from what I have seen, have been highly inflated numbers. And one of the concerns that we do have is that as we begin to look at the future for public television, we would hope that people looking at something as important as the future of public television in our society would be willing to sit at a table to discuss the future using information that can be good, valid information as opposed to inflated numbers. Now, in answer to your question, the first series of Barney that was aired on public television, first of all, Barney had been in commercial release in video stores for quite some time.
Down in Texas.
Successful there. But the fact is, it wasn't on television. Commercial television wasn't interested in broadcasting it. And when it came to public television, we took a look at it. In all fairness, we underestimated the popularity of the program. So the first deal that was struck as far as return on rights for public broadcasting was probably not a good deal, or at least not as good as it could have been. We have since renegotiated that deal with a group called the Lions Group. They're the people that produce it. They're a for-profit company. And the deal is a more favorable deal than public broadcasting was sharing the revenues. The reality is, though, anybody producing for television holds away from the producer as much as they can in the way of residual merchandising rights. That's true in the commercial world. It's true in public broadcasting. We probably do need to be better at what we do in the way of commercial negotiations related to programs. That has not been what we were put in business to do. We were put in business to bring good educational television programs to television. And the two that you've named, certainly Sesame Street being one of them, fits that mold wonderfully. The Children's Television Workshop takes a major amount of the dollars they make off of the licensing of Sesame Street for merchandising, as you say, the dolls, the lunch pails, and plows it back into the production of additional Sesame Streets, lowers the cost to the stations. They end up being, if I recall the fact correctly, they're the second or third largest funder of public television programs, when you include Sesame Street as one of those programs. So there's a return on investment to public television.
Is the same true with the Ken Burns video cassettes and the books that went along with baseball?
PBS Video, in conjunction now with Turner Broadcasting and Distribution, sells the Ken Burns video series of the Civil War as well as his baseball series, and is seeing revenues come back from that, yeah.
Have you guys developed a plan, maybe some of the other stations around the country that are funded by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, have formulated some plan Bs in case the Republicans are successful and do eliminate much or all of your funding?
In other words, do we have a worst case scenario?
Yeah, are you going to have a bake sale?
A fallback position, a bake sale?
Yeah.
We constantly look at the budget and determine what we would do if certain funds were to be diminished or certain funds were to disappear. This is such a large element of funding. In fairness, no, we have not looked at it and said, what if it all went away? We do know that because it basically is seed money for programs, it allows them to come into being, which in turn generates the membership that we rely on so heavily for funding as well as underwriting, that the ripple effect set up by the removal of all of the federal funds would be devastating to public broadcasting. Would Channel 48 be on the air in 2 or 3 years? We don't want to misrepresent it. Certainly they would be. Would the programs that the people come there expecting to see be on the air? We think they would be grievously affected.
It wouldn't be 24 hours of Julius Sumner Miller, would it?
I'm sorry?
Would it end up being 24 hours of Julius Sumner Miller?
I know that I can't comment on.
But I still think they should give the Star Hustler a whole hour.
A lot of the old shows is probably we'd drag out a few more of those tapes we could see through.
All right, well, we sure appreciate you taking the time to talk to us this morning.
I've enjoyed being with you and enjoy the program, and we'll continue to try to keep public television going, and we wish you the best as well in what you do.
And we'll try to keep public radio going.
Well, thank you very much.
Do you want to tell any of our listeners who their congressmen are if they want to write some letters? Because I know that John Boehner doesn't really support the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
I will tell you right now that if anyone wishes to call the station, they are welcome to, and we can certainly give them that information. We'd be glad to either mail it to them or to give it to them over the telephone.
And how do you get through to the station?
The station has a phone that opens up about 8:30, 9 o'clock in the morning and goes until 5, and the number is 381-4033.
And like you do, we also solicit donations and pledges from our audience to keep the programs alive.
Hey, measure twice, cut once. That's what they always say on this old house.
That's true.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Later.
Good advice. How much money has that saved you?
Okay.
Listen, take care. Have a nice evening.
You too.
Goodbye now.
Later.
Now, if you want to keep WAIF alive, you just put some money in an envelope and send it to P.O. Box 6126, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45206.
Attention, Chris and Rob.
Attention, Chris and Rob.
No.
No, put it down. Attention, Fun Drive. Attention, Memberthon 95. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. The phone lines are open at 749-1444. Of course, we're concerned about our jobs. We don't want the Corporation for Public Broadcasting to pull out all the funds that it gives to WAIF. Actually, as Rob pointed out, we don't get funds directly from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, but there are grants that are filed on behalf of the station that take care of a lot of this, that keep the electric bills paid, keep the phone bills paid, so you can keep calling Chris and Rob at 749-1444 and keep some of our fine programs like Dubberama and The Electric Fence and The Bubbles in the Think Tank and The Late Late Show and The Rhyme Time on the air and serving the community and bringing some unusual music to your ears.
Yeah, exactly. What you said and more.
Yeah. 749-1444. This is the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show. Stay tuned.
How many people were here last night? Sounds like about 40 or 50. 40 what? 40. Huh? This is a brand new shirt. I wore this. All right, modern lovers. Did you guys see me? I swear. Didn't I take this out of the package tonight? I did. What do you mean? You were too. This is a brand new shirt. What do you mean? If you had said that last night, you would have got me. But this is a brand new shirt.
Wow.
All right. I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And the phone number?
749-1444.
And together,
we're the Chris and Rob Late Night Talk Show.
We take calls. This is one of those call-in programs, but unlike other...
A novel approach to radio.
Unlike some of the other call-in programs you might hear on your AM or FM dial around the city or around the nation, we are not going to tell you who we think is guilty in the O.J. Simpson trial.
And if you call up and tell us you're a Satanist, we won't ask you what kind.
Right. And if you call us up and tell us you're a conservative, we won't tell you that you're going to go to hell. You should be a liberal.
Just a garden variety Satanist, huh?
Yeah.
I heard that the other day on a different AM.
I bet you did. Images is an independent nonprofit center for fine photography serving a multi-state region through exhibitions, workshops, lectures, and other services. Their offices are located downtown at 1311 Main Street. If you want more information on Images or how to become involved with Images, dial this number.
Is Images an acronym?
I don't know. It could be. I-M-A-G-E-S. If you want to call...
We have another acronym contest?
Images... No, we're not having an acronym contest tonight. But if you do come up with an acronym for Images and you want to give them a call, or if you just want to get involved with their independent nonprofit fine photography situation down there, 241-8124. Once again, 241-8124. Leave a message if you get a machine.
You know, somewhere in the Constitution, it does say something about, like, Congress shall have the power to encourage scientific and practical arts by the use of buying the rights to authors and inventions.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I don't know. I wish I was a constitutional scholar so I could explain it to you. But it does say something in there about Congress has the power to fund science and it said like practical or useful arts. And
what about obscene art?
Didn't say anything
about
obscene.
What about homoerotic photography?
Well, I don't think photography. What was it called? Daguerreotype. It was French. A French guy named Daguerre invented it, so he called it daguerreotype. Daguerreotype was more still like 50 years away when the Constitution was written, I guess. So homoerotic photography was still like 60 years away.
Rob, wasn't it you who told me that throughout the history of Western culture, governments have played an active role in the artistic endeavors of the community?
Well, as a classical music scholar, Chris, I'm sure you're well aware that many of the pieces that we all love now were commissioned by kings and queens of Europe.
Kind of like when the King Joseph commissioned Mozart to become one of his court composers.
Right, and that idiot guy in the movie Amadeus commissioned him, too.
Mm-hmm. Too many notes, he says. Too many notes.
Wolfgang, Wolfie. But if you dig Mozart, you can tune into Fun with Mozart right here on WAF. When's that on, Jim? Fun with Mozart.
Fun with Mozart. It's on in the middle of the night sometime.
Tomorrow night.
It's kind of like art time slot, but tomorrow night. So if you're working the night shift and you're tuned in tonight and you're going to be working the night shift again tomorrow, check out Fun with Mozart right here on this station. I'll tell you, even if you don't like classical music, this guy Wayne who plays it for you, he's a real nut.
And he could probably tell you who commissioned what pieces, and I bet most of the pieces were commissioned by some sort of royalty.
Yeah, he'll fill you in on all the Mozart poop. So tune in tomorrow night for Fun with Mozart. Jason, you're on the air with Chris.
And Rob.
Yeah, I think you guys are losers, man. I think you're up there forever. You guys certainly suck.
Well,
what'd you... Oh.
Well, why do you feel that way?
It's because, listen to you guys, you're a bunch of fucking kids.
Well, you gotta back up your claims that we suck with a little evidence.
Prove it.
Convince us that we suck. I mean, we think we're okay.
Where's the evidence of our suckage?
And so does the rest of the tri-state. And get a new phone, too, buddy.
Another trip to Big Lots is in order for you. So anyway, I'm thrifting earlier today.
If that bum can afford it. Okay, so you're at the thrift store.
And,
because you can't afford it either.
I had never seen this before anywhere at a thrift store. At any kind of... At a flea market, at a garage sale, or anything.
What, Rob?
There is, like, they have the table, oh crap, just like old answering machines, old telephones, old, like...
Old hot doggers.
Viewmasters and things like
that. That's where you can get one of those hot doggers. It will cook your hot dog with radiation. You eat it, and you'll start to glow, and you'll die.
For 20 cents, there is a beat-up little container of transmission fluid that was, like, a third full.
Really?
It was a quart jug of transmission fluid that was filled up to like the 6 ounce line for 20 cents. I thought that was a new low in thrifting.
Is that how you got down to the station tonight?
It was. I would have never made it. Good thing I had that quarter on me. With tax, I barely got out of there.
Good thing. A little later tonight, we're going to try to call the guy that invented the Famous Amos cookie.
What's his name?
Famous Amos.
Yeah, not anymore.
But actually, he's not that famous anymore. He's now the no-name Amos. Way low, Amos. We'll call him a little later. What else we got on the agenda tonight, Robbie?
Oh, funding for the arts. The State of the Union.
Oh, fun. Don't forget we got fun tonight.
Oh, we always have fun. The State of the Union was last night.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. Talk about those things. State of the Union went for like an hour, 21 minutes.
Boring.
Hour 21.
You should have no applause.
Man. Yeah. I bet if you did cut out the applause... It probably would have been only about 45 minutes long.
Rob, a few minutes ago, I alluded to the fact that all the other talk show hosts that I've heard in town and on the national radio are accusing O.J. Simpson of murder. And the trial has only just begun. I saw the opening argument today on behalf of the prosecution. I thought, man, it looks like he did it. But I'm not going to go on the radio and say that beyond a shadow of a doubt, this man did it.
You just said, oh, it looks like he did it.
Well, I haven't heard the defense's argument yet.
Yeah.
The defense has not had their opening argument. I heard they really got it buttoned up. I also heard they're having a lot of squabbles.
I called Channel 5 today, and I said, listen, Channel 5, I want to watch Days of Our Lives.
You did?
Yes.
And what'd they say?
Well, we couldn't
I saw an old lady on TV that said the O.J. trial is better than any soap opera she ever saw.
They were laughing their ass off. I said, I want to watch Days of Our Lives because they got this double character under them now. It's
really?
Like possessed.
Well, are they going to... I mean, all the networks are running it. Aren't they just going to post?
They don't even have the
Days
chance. They only have the chance because they're not even sending the affiliates the feed for the soap operas.
Right. So they'll just say... you. It's not like you're going to miss an episode. Since you don't have a job.
Delayed.
My second shift job.
Okay. Hello, Zeke, you're on the air.
No, I tape them. Yeah. I tape them while I'm at work at P&G.
Oh, okay. Likely story.
Well,
what do you want, Zeke?
I got a VCR today from the thrift store.
Hey, would you guys shut up?
Don't mess with the soap operas, man.
Tell Chris and Rob to shut up when Rob's talking about his favorite soap and what's going to happen to you.
Click.
You're going to get hung up on.
Click.
All I wanted to say was that Famous Amos is on TV now somewhere.
Famous Amos is on TV now somewhere? Who cares? He's no longer Famous Amos. Now he's Wally Amos. He had to change his name to Wallace Amos or something. So anyway, that's what's been happening in the world. Really, because you don't want to talk about the State of the Union because it was kind of boring. And we're predictable. They just throw out a bunch of big platitudes like, I want to make America great for all Americans. And people clap. And then the Republican came out and said, I want to make New Jersey great for all New Jersey Ians, uns, ites. And the New Jersey people clap. I was like,
Oids. New Jersey
Oids. The New Jersey Oids. They all said, Oi!
Oi!
It was so stupid.
What, were they all in AC/DC?
No, they all sold batteries.
Oi!
The new Energizer.
Oi.
It'll surprise you.
Oi! Oi. Okay, the phone number here is 749-1444, 749-1444. If you're calling long distance, if you're out of state, that's area code 513-749-1444. We'll be right back.
Well, a welfare gal and her drunk galoot, and nobody wearing a three-piece suit. You meet folks this way, just don't see why flying. So, you take the plane, but I'll take the bus this time. Well.
Okay, we'll make it quick.
Okay, well, I'm chewing on a cookie right now. And you know what kind of cookie it is?
It's 2:30 here.
It's a Famous Amos chocolate chip and pecan
doing
cookie.
A radio show.
And we have on the phone line Famous Amos. We're in Hawaii.
Wally Amos, you're out in Hawaii, right?
Yes, sir.
What can we call you?
Wally Amos.
We can call you Wally Amos. We won't get sued.
Wally Amos the Cookie Man.
Can we call you Famous Wally Amos the Cookie Man?
You can do that. Oh, yep. Wally Amos, the Famous Cookie Man. You know,
guess what we're eating right now.
I hope you're eating how many cookies. If you're not, I'm going to hang up.
We're eating Famous Amos cookies, chocolate chip, and pecans.
Oh,
boy, they're not as good as they used to be.
No, they're not, man.
Well, I understand that they're called Famous Amos cookies because you invented them, but you don't own the company anymore.
That's correct.
How come is that?
I lost the company, and then I started up another company in 91 using my name. Famous Amos sued me, said they owned my name and likeness. So then I
wait, you mean you sued yourself?
It felt like that at first. And then I started a company called the Uncle No Name Cookie Company.
No Name Cookies.
Uncle
and
No
did
Name.
You even have to shave your beard so you wouldn't be confused with the Famous Amos that used to sell Famous Amos cookies?
Oh, I didn't have to, but it didn't make sense to look like Famous Amos since I had nothing to do with the company. And my goal is to make people forget Famous Amos.
So now you're back to being Wally Amos.
Uh-huh.
The man with no name.
Wally
the
Amos,
man with no
man
beard.
With no name.
And the man with no beard.
Man, no facial hair. Wally No Beard, they call me.
So tell us about your new company, the No Name. How do you pronounce it?
Noname. But Noname is just another way of saying no name.
That's a Hawaiian pronunciation, isn't it?
That's correct. That's correct.
And what do you produce? You're still in the cookie biz.
Yeah, we make chocolate chip cookies. That's all I know how to make. I founded the company in 92. Famous Amos sued me April 1st, 92, and 7 months later...
That was just
was
a joke. That was a joke. On April 1st, people sue each other, like, for fun.
Yeah, I thought it was a joke, you know, but it wasn't a joke, man. They gave me this whole stack of papers at Los Angeles Airport. And, but 7 months later, I was selling cookies as Uncle No Name. And so, it doesn't matter what you call it. It's the cookie that matters. It's what the cookie tastes like that's important. And the cookies that I make taste like the cookies that I founded almost 20 years ago. You know, it was 20 years ago that I started Famous Amos.
So Famous Amos cookies and Famous No Name cookies are the same cookie?
No, they're not, because the cookie that they're making is not my cookie.
Okay, I got a box of Famous Amos cookies, which are not your cookies anymore, right?
Right.
These are the old cookie company that sued you. And I'm going to tell you what the ingredients are, and you tell me if these are the ingredients you started out with, okay?
Okay.
Enriched wheat flour.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, chocolate chips.
Mm-hmm.
Chocolate liquor.
Well, that's a part of the chocolate
chip. Cocoa butter.
That's all in the chocolate.
Okay, soy lyophin added as an emulsifier.
Nope, never use that.
No, okay, margarine with partially homogenized soybean oil.
Vegetable margarine, yeah.
Okay, brown sugar,
mm-hmm.
Sugar, pecan, coconuts, eggs, leavenothinging with sodium bicarbonate, sodium acid, prophosphate, monocalcium phosphate.
Baking soda,
okay. Soy lecithin, which is an emulsifier. What is an emulsifier?
It's something to extend the shelf life of the product.
What are they adding to it that you didn't want in it?
I think you this should they do they say artificial flavoring?
Caramel color.
Artificial flavoring?
Yeah, it's all over here.
I never used artificial flavoring. I always used pure vanilla extract.
Real flavoring.
Yep, absolutely. Because if you use anything artificial, it seems to me you probably get an artificial cookie.
Okay. Now, on the back of the box, there's a disclaimer. It says, "How Wally Amos's Cookies Got Famous." Mm-hmm. And you can tell us if this is accurate or not. Okay. Originally, Wally Amos, a true cookie lover, baked his cookies to share with his friends. Once he perfected the ultimate chocolate chip cookie, he started using them as his calling card and as thank you gifts. Mm-hmm. As Wally made his rounds in the entertainment business, more and more of his friends and clients asked for another bag of Amos's cookies. Finally, with the backing of several of Hollywood's most fantastic personalities, Wally launched the famous Amos Cookie Company in 1975. Mm-hmm. Our cookies are bite-sized and crunchy. They're delicious and famous.
They're famous.
Can you stop them from using the name Wally Amos? Because they're still using your name in their advertising.
What they say on the back, that information that they say is accurate. One thing that they no longer say, when the lawsuit started, I countersued them because at one time on the back of their package, they said that they still use the original recipe. And so I countersued them because clearly they did not use the original recipe. And so the lawsuit went on for 19 months. And the settlement is that they have the right to use the name Wally Amos as a trademark for a food product.
That doesn't say Wally Amos with the little R around it, though.
Right, but they're never going to do it, you know.
Right.
As long as I'm alive, I don't think they'll do it. But anyway, if they wanted to, they could create a product, a food product, and call it Wally Amos. And they could put that bearded picture on there if they wanted to also. I own the name Wally Amos for all non-food activities.
So you can make a doll and call it Wally Amos.
I can make a doll, I can make a pencil, I can do a Wally Amos, anything as long as you can't eat it.
You can name your dog Wally Amos.
Yep. I also have what's called rights of publicity, which means that I can go on television with the Uncle No Name cookie and hold it up and say, "Hi folks, my name is Wally Amos and these are my cookies." So I can advertise, I can promote any food product that I want. And also, as I mentioned earlier, they had to remove the quote on their package that they used my original recipe.
Well, how many markets are the Uncle No Name cookies in now?
No Name.
We're primarily in the East Coast and some Midwestern, like Michigan, Illinois, Indiana.
Where can we get them in Cincinnati?
I don't know if you can get them anywhere yet. What we're doing right now, they're going to send some cookies to you, though.
All right.
Right on.
Yeah, my office is going to send some cookies to you. But right now, we're concentrating on vending machines with a little 2-ounce bag that's the no-nut. I call it the no-nut chocolate chip cookie because it's just a regular chocolate chip cookie without any nuts in it. It's a process. It's going to take time, man, for us to cover the whole United States. But we're getting at it. It's just a slow process.
And you've authored 3 books.
Yeah, my first book was in 83, called The Famous Famous Story, The Face That Launched the 1,000 Chips. And my second book was called The Power in You, which was published in 1986. The Power in You, 10 Secret Ingredients for Inner Strength. And my current book now is Man with No Name, Turn Lemons into Lemonade. Because, you know, I mean, I took what everybody referred to as a negative situation. That's why I wrote the book, because people kept coming up to me. After 13 months, man, God, man, it's so bad. I'm so sorry. You can't lose your name. Oh, it's so sad. It's so sad. It's so sad. I said, but it's not sad. It's just a name, you know. Hell, there's just one name I couldn't use. The millions that I could, so I chose.
You could even call yourself a funny little symbol like Prince.
Huh?
Did you ever think of doing like Prince and making up a little hieroglyph for yourself?
Yeah.
Maybe like a little picture of a cookie or something.
Someone asked Prince how you pronounce it. He said, "You don't."
Well, he's pretentious. I don't think you're as pretentious as him.
Well, I hope
you sound a lot more down to earth.
All I want to do is sell cookies. I'm not being pretentious.
Now, you used to be in the music business, right?
I was an agent at William Morris.
Well, so what do you think of Prince as compared to, like, Marvin Gaye and all those classic old soulsters?
Well, you know, they're different, man. I'm not going to judge Prince or his music or whatever. Everybody does whatever they want to do.
Yeah, but do you like Prince?
I don't listen to his music, you know.
You don't have any of his albums?
No.
You think Marvin Gaye was a better singer?
He was a different singer. I don't know what's better. I mean, is Bob Dylan a better singer? I mean,
man.
You know, how can you say what's better?
Bob Dylan is the greatest.
Yeah, but, you know, is a singer, is Bob Dylan the greatest?
Yeah,
I don't know.
He sure is.
I like Joe Cocker. Is Joe Cocker a great singer? I mean, what classifies a great singer? Is Pavarotti, is he a great singer? I mean,
it's the communication that an artist has with his audience.
Mm.
So you live in Hawaii now?
Mm-hmm.
So how many times have you seen Don Ho, and would you consider Don Ho a great singer?
Don Ho's a singer. I don't know how you would classify a great singer. I mean, what I would say was a great singer might be a horrible singer for someone else.
Well, know? How do you classify a great chocolate chip cookie?
I think it has to have a homemade taste to it. I think it has to have a lot of ingredients, and I think it has to have it has to be all natural.
Now, of course, I don't expect you to give your secret recipe over the air, but do you have any suggestions for some young, aspiring cookie makers at home for some things that they could add to their recipe that might spice it up a little?
But the recipe is no secret. Hell, everybody makes chocolate chip cookies. The recipe is on the back of the Nestle chocolate chip package.
Then why should we go buy yours?
You know, because, you know, who wants to go make cookies? You know, and most people that make them anyway, they screw them up one way or another. So if you want a cookie that, you know, that really has lots of ingredients, a homemade cookie, you'll buy a no-name cookie.
It's okay, well, cookie. One thing is different about homemade from yours.
Say again?
One thing that differentiates homemade from yours is that most homemade cookies tend to be soft, whereas your cookies are hard cookies.
I've always had a Christmas cookie. You know,
well, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's different.
Oh, no, I'm not. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just want to explain why I may make a Christmas cookie.
Okay, go ahead.
I didn't even know cookies were soft because, as a youngster, growing up with my aunt, I lived with her. She was the first one to make chocolate chip cookies. Her cookies were always crispy.
Did she let you lick the spoon?
Huh?
Did she let you lick the spoon?
Oh, and the bowl.
Oh, that's the best part. That's better than the cookie itself.
If she wanted to soften her cookies, she would slice up apples to put in them, and the moisture from the apples would make the cookies soft. But I never even knew that cookies were supposed to be soft. I'd always had crispy cookies. So, again, it's just a matter of personal preference.
Would you just prefer them the crispy kind?
I like them crispy. But, you know, when I had retail stores, and I'll probably have retail stores again, I think I'm going to open a store in Dallas. I got a son that lives in Dallas, and we're going to open a store there. We're going to call it the Wally Amos General Store. And because, you know, I got sued because I started a company called Chip and Cookie. Wally Amos presents Chip and Cookie, which were two chocolate chip cookie stuffed doll characters that my wife, Christine, created.
Wow.
And so we're going to sell those dolls again and cookie jars and a whole line of ceramic pieces with the Chip and Cookie images on it. But we'll sell a line of chocolate chip cookies, and we'll call them Chip and Cookie cookies.
Now, didn't one of the mistakes you made back when you were running the Famous Amos Cookie Company was you tried to get involved in too many different ventures like that with cookies,
with
restaurants and stuff?
Oh, I was doing too much stuff, man. I should have really focused on my core business at the time, which was selling chocolate chip cookies. And I was irresponsible. I mean, I didn't have a good management team. You know, that was my major mistake because didn't have a good team of people. I didn't really accept the responsibility of running the company. I didn't really accept the fact that you really need to know how to manage a company, you know? And so eventually it caught up with me. But, you know, life is just a series of experiences. Hell, you one thing don't work, you do something else. Something goes wrong, you start over again.
That's
hopefully
a pretty healthy attitude, and I hope some people in our listening audience can gain a little inspiration from your, you know, happy-go-lucky attitude.
Well, you know, it may be it's happy-go-lucky, but I think also it's, you know, hell, man, it's not blaming somebody for what happens to you. You know, it's taking responsibility for your own life. It's not being victimized. But it's learning from your mistakes. You know, here's an interesting concept in mistakes. When I was in show business, I went to many recording sessions. And I mean, they don't just go in the studio and record a song and then leave. They might record the same song 50 times. But after each time, they listen to the previous take. They kind of analyze it. Everybody kind of decides, you know, the producer primarily say, well, let's do this or let's do that. But even the musicians, you know, have some input in it. And then they say, okay, let's another take, take 33. So, you know, it was just a mistake. And they do another take, and nobody curses anybody out. Nobody gets beat up. Nobody, you know, you don't even judge the previous take. You just say, hey, it was a take that wasn't what we wanted. Now let's do another take. And so life is just a series of takes.
So you're just on take 3 now.
God, I'm on about take 500 probably.
Well, Mr. Amos, do you think O.J. did it?
This is America.
You think it's funny?
You're innocent until proven guilty.
Right. Well, that's a good attitude. A lot of talk show hosts have been going on about how O.J. did it, but he hasn't been tried yet, and I don't think it's the business of any talk show host or cookie guy to say that O.J. did or did not do it.
Absolutely. And I kind of make it a practice of really not even talking about it because, God, everybody else is talking about it, man. You don't need another guy here talking about it.
Have I heard a rumor?
What?
That Ernie the Keeper Elf was like a pervert and he liked really young boys. Have you heard anything about that?
I haven't heard that. Where'd you hear that?
We got our sources.
What's your favorite?
You guys are in a big cookie town there, though.
We sure are. Hey, Wally, what's your favorite cookie besides your own?
Oh, there is none. I don't eat other people's cookies.
You don't like Nestle or Keebler or none of them?
The favorite cookie besides my own is my wife's cookies.
There you go.
Have you ever had Chips Ahoy?
What's that?
Chips Ahoy rule, dude.
What? Is that a boat or what?
Do you still market your cookies as a gourmet cookie?
No, I don't. The Noname cookies are not a gourmet cookie. But it's a... I market it as a home-style cookie.
Dude, a cookie is a cookie. How can you have a gourmet cookie or a home-style cookie?
Well, I think that when I started Famous Amos, cookies were handmade. It was absolutely a homemade cookie. And it was so different than any cookie that was being sold commercially. And so... I didn't say it was a homemade cookie. The media said it was a homemade cookie. But I never said I never said it was a gourmet cookie. The media, established it. It's a gourmet cookie. It wasn't mine.
Those cookie journalists are crazy.
Well, did the marketing department call it a gourmet cookie or did a newspaper
or something? The marketing department. The media called it a gourmet cookie.
Your box didn't say that?
No. I never said that either.
All the press...
I just said it's a handmade, homemade cookie. But because, you know what established the gourmet aspect of it?
What?
It was the price. when I started selling cookies, I was selling you for $3 a pound. It was the most expensive cookie out there.
Well, why were you jacking the price up so much?
He was making it by hand. Weren't you listening?
I jacked the price up. Hell, had a lot of good ingredients in it. Lots of pecans. Cookie had 10% pecans in it. And I bet they ain't 10% worth of pecans in Famous Amos cookies now. I had 21% chocolate in my cookies, man. I bet those cookies that you're eating there don't have 21% chocolate.
Well, let's analyze one and see.
So, it was, man. It was worth it.
Look, in this one cookie, all the chocolate is down in the lower, like, 1/8 of it, and the rest of it's all cookie.
Yeah, well, yeah.
See, if you could see it, it looks like a big old... What's that look like, Rob?
Cookies in the box don't look like the cookies on the package, do they?
No, they sure don't.
They don't. Yeah.
Big business, man. Big business.
All right, we're going to let you get back to sleep. What's the name of the new company?
The Uncle No Name Cookie Company. They're going to be in Cincinnati soon, man. You're going to go to a vending machine. You're going to see a cute little red and yellow package in there. You can say, oh, my God, those are Amos's cookies. Those are his No Name cookies. The No Name No Nut Chocolate Chip Cookie. It's a unit cookie.
Okay, what's the name of the new book?
The new book is Man With No Name, Turn Lemons Into Lemonade. Let me mention two other things.
Go ahead.
I've always been involved in the community. I was always giving stuff back. When I had Famous Amos for years, I promoted literacy and used Famous Amos to promote literacy. I've been national spokesperson for Literacy Volunteers of America since 1979. 15 years, consistently without stopping. And we donate 5 cents from every book to Literacy Volunteers of America. And my publisher Aslan and I, donate 5 cents from every book to the National Center for Family Literacy. We also donate 1% of our profits after taxes, pre-tax profits, to Citizen Schools, which is a dropout prevention program. And I'm on the board of directors of Citizen Schools. So, I mean, that was a great part of how I created my fame, just by giving back, man, and by being a part of the community at large.
Okay, well, we sure appreciate you taking the time to be with Chris and Rob, and I think Chris has another question.
No, I'm just going to tell you, we'll stay on the line here. We're going to go play a record, and then we'll give you our address. You can send us a box of your new cookies, and we'll give a good cookie review on the air next week.
Well, I think I got your address. I'll take it again, though, but you, cookies are probably en route to you. Now, hold on a second.
Well, you know, if you want to send us...
You know, I got a good friend that lives in Cincinnati. I'm sure he's not, he's not awake now.
Who's that?
His name is Vern Knuckles. He's an English teacher. I came to Cincinnati once and spoke to a group of schools. I've been there a couple of times and spoke to some students.
Did you like it?
Oh, yeah, it's great. I've been to... Listen, do you know that Cincinnati is the Queen City?
Yeah, we've heard that.
Why do you call it the Queen City?
Well, a lot of people...
Drag,
yeah,
what?
We like to dress up in drag here. Mark Twain named it the Queen City, Buster, and don't forget it. Yeah, Mark Twain
did
came
not.
To Cincinnati is one
he
of
did
it.
Not. He would not step foot in
Cincinnati. Yes, Mark Twain did, I think. I saw a great quote today by Mark Twain.
What was
and
that?
It said, being careful 100 times is better than dying once.
Uh-huh.
Mark Twain had a lot of wisdom.
He ain't died broke, though, you know.
Well, a lot of people do. Most people do.
Look both ways before you cross the street.
That makes sense, especially in London.
Okay. Well, we're going to give away some cookies on our show next week if they arrive.
Well, they will arrive.
We're going to ask a trivia question. We'll look up in my book a cookie trivia. Uh-huh. We'll ask a trivia question, and whoever calls in with the right answer, we'll give them a box of your new no-name cookies.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
So
right.
Thanks.
I'm going to hold on. You'll give me your address to make sure I have it.
Okay.
And I'll send you some cookies. Hey, thanks, guys.
Thanks a lot.
The Chris and Rob Talk Show. We'll be right back.